The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
We'll make you weep.
You're cheating.
You'll cry.
Gonna tell on you.
Let's see, one of my favorite bits is to replace the word heart in a song with the word fart.
Oh,
and it's
you're
instant comedy. It's
fart.
It is
gonna tell on you.
Math. The definition of comedy,
thank
really.
You. Yeah.
I just remember, it was like a CD. Mix, like a mix CD that they were selling, kind of like now that's what I call music too, but it was like
oh,
old
I understand.
People country
a CD,
music.
Yeah. Like the letters CD.
Like
I thought you were saying
album.
Like a CD. It's like CD.
It's not CD. CD.
No, sorry. This is okay, Uncle
gotcha.
Corner talking
it's like
about
CD nuts. CD's nuts.
Whoa. Oh.
Which
is
that is
too
a
candy early?
Bar you can
too
get
soon.
At a 7-Eleven now.
CD nuts. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
called D's Nuts.
D's Nuts.
Candy
D's
bar.
Nuts. Yeah.
You guys ever realize Babe Ruth looks like a turd?
Babe Ruth looked like a turd.
But I still love him.
That's
They're
from this
so
play,
good.
Too. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi.
We're in rare form today.
Yes.
Yes, but we're all beautiful, and I love you.
Yes.
I want to put both of your bodies on my bodies. I texted you that earlier.
You texted really us like earlier, that. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. Sure.
First of all, SAG is striking.
Yum.
Girl.
We stand with SAG, obviously. Yep. Are either of you SAG?
Yeah.
No.
I'm going,
yeah?
Scott?
This city wants nothing to do with the film
yeah,
and television
yeah.
industry.
I'm going to try and go. Though? I'm going to try and hit the picket lines. Because of my crappy day job, I haven't hit the lines yet. But I think I'm going to do it on Friday at probably Paramount or Netflix. But I get getting the 5 emails a day with the status updates. And
yeah,
no, it's great. Yes. Like, they've done a really great job of informing the membership, letting you know exactly what you can do.
Oh, that's good.
And you know, where to go, where to sign up. Like, it's insanely well organized. They've,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good union. I mean, I've always felt
I think there's a lot of ignorance surrounding the strike in terms of thinking that it's a bunch of rich celebrities out there striking, being mad they're not getting money, and that's
sure.
just not true.
That's
sort of the
think
one
think SAG.
Right, and that's sort of the 1% of SAG, right? And then the other 99% is people like us, people who are just trying to make a living out here, who are making art, and maybe haven't booked anything in 12 years. Maybe have, but you wouldn't know their name. Maybe, you know, they haven't made a lot of money off this, so they have 3 other jobs. That's how we have to live a lot of the time, right? And to think that it's just the cast of SNL and, Margot
right.
Robbie
yeah,
being angry
yeah.
that they don't have money. That's just not true.
That's not what it is. And most of those celebrities are on the line, not because they need
right.
to be there, but because they understand what's
that's
going
right.
on. I think the most... There were 2 stats this week that really struck me. 83% of union members of SAG membership do not qualify for medical insurance.
Mm.
The minimum is $26,000 a year. So to give you an idea, 83% make less than $26,000 a year.
That's a really good,
who's living off of
clear.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Mandy Moore was talking about her residuals from what was the show she was just on?
This Not Is
the,
Us.
This
All
is
I'm
Us.
Thinking is Tangled.
Right, no. This Is Us.
A Walk
last,
to Remember.
Her last residual check was 13 cents. And she's
yeah.
like, now, you know, but it doesn't matter. You know, I think about, like, you know, I just got a residual check for $15 from a gig I shot 8 years ago. And I was like,
yeah.
holy shit. Well, that's cool. That's how, you know, but I don't think the average Joe fully understands, nor fully understands the sheer economics of it. And part of it is just pure deception on corporations' part.
There, There's a bunch of old, like, especially children's stars on TikTok, or like old 80s, 90s stars on TikTok who just do series of opening their residual checks to tell you how much they made. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I wonder if some of them are Real Housewives.
I don't think so. I think one of them is, no, it's like 80s and 90s stars and like kid stars. And I think it's not the Richards. And I think one of them is Rufio. Whose name I forget. I think he does it, and like a few other people like that, and it's kind of fun, but it's also like
sad. MTV's Unwrapped for like one episode.
Word.
And everyone was like, "Oh my god, it's Rufio."
Remember that? Oh my god, Rufio Bangarang. Isn't he? He's in a dance movie too. He's in. Oh crap! Something with like "Shall We Dance" or something. It's not "Shall We Dance," but it's one of those.
May I say something on the opposite end of the spectrum?
No.
No.
Well, fuck the both of you, I'm saying
you're
it.
Right.
So I pull up, you know, Chrome on my phone and Google hits in, and then it's just got like the top articles that it thinks I would be interested in.
Yes.
And one of the headlines one day was, "Hey guys, bad news. House of the Dragon season 2 might be delayed."
Oh,
and
no.
If you click on it, they're talking about the strike that those actors are striking now.
Yeah.
And like, I was initially mad about like, they're making this an article about everyone's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, your favorite TV is going to take longer."
Of course.
But at the same time, like, it's also letting those people know what's going on. Like, my mother and my parents in general, who I don't talk to a whole lot, especially about the industry, texted me weeks ago and they were like, "Tell us about the strike." So, like, you know, I mean, even though articles like that could be on the surface frustrating, I was like, yeah, but maybe people will read that and be like, "What the fuck's going on?"
Yeah. Also,
as of today,
IOTC might be going on strike.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So, which would affect theater? Obviously, it would shut down Broadway completely. And the Playhouse and other, Pasadena Playhouse and other regional theaters around here would get shut down. Amundsen would get shut down. I mean, it'd be a big deal if IOTC went on strike. And I wonder if Actors Equity would potentially go with it. I don't know. I mean, it's a rough time for all of us. I don't know if that's in the cards.
It is, but it's, you know, it's about economics, and it's about, you know, who creates products that sell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that when Bob Iger got on last week and was like, "These actors are being unrealistic," and I find it very disturbing, literally while he's having a brand new yacht built behind him.
Yeah,
and it, you know, what was there was a stat. It was like, if all of these CEOs merely gave up 4% of their annual salary, the problem would be solved. You could give the unions what they're asking for.
Literally, nothing crazy at all.
Just like a weird both pride WGA. Point for them. Yeah,
right. You know,
it's messed up.
Just giving a little bit, but like, you know, because of streaming, residual world has changed. Like, I remember, like. Not to boast or anything, but like my first commercial, I made almost $45,000 from that commercial because it played and played and got re-upped and re-upped, and those residuals kept coming in. And nowadays that just doesn't happen. There's just so very few of those commercials that that you can score on, you know. And I mean, like, I made $45,000 over the course of like 2.5 years on it, but. Yeah,
that's no small chunk of change, though.
No, and for a poor 20-something, especially like working at Kinko's, like it was really, you know, allowed me to get a car and, you know, that kind of shit and take care of my shit.
May I say something short and super positive?
Yes, absolutely. Nice.
We need positivity.
We just did our very short 2-night run of There's Evil in This House during the CLA Arts Festival at the Zephyr Theater.
Written by
friend of the pod, Natalie Nicole Dressel.
We stand a little.
And I was producing and also playing a role in it. And I didn't talk about it much because I think I was too in the middle of it that every time we got on to record, I was thinking about just getting through the episode.
Yeah.
But we had two shows that were really well attended by incredibly supportive audiences. We won best. Best Ensemble of the festival.
Yay.
And that was kind of a fun little surprise because we weren't expecting anything like that. And then, like, we had donors that helped us pay for everything. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody and just even the people that like lent us an ear or their skill or whatever. Like there was a ton of hands that made this thing happen. And I'm still catching up on my sleep, but it was a very rewarding project for me. And it was a nice cherry on top of a couple months of really real intensity for me. So thanks everybody. And that's it. I love y'all. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Aww, and you know, that's a play that will live on beyond that festival, which is always great.
I hope so.
And, no, it will. I mean, they've done workshops of it. They, you know, there's people interested. That it shall live on, which is why I sort of didn't feel so bad not being able to make it. Cause it's got many lives to live. It's an exciting piece. And Natalie's a great writer and we all, you know, support her work. I built the Indiegogo for Natalie to fill in. That's all I did, though. That's
thanks,
I contributed to the Indiegogo, and hey, it turns out that when you do that, you get 400 emails a day about the Indiegogo way of life.
Oh,
like, they have nothing to do with the project. Like, and then like you go in and you're like, okay, I want to unsubscribe to this. And it's like, there's like 14 categories of emails that you have to click or unclick. And I'm like, hey, like... hey, it's cool. I'm glad I did it. But I just had never remembered it being so intense. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
But,
sure. Yeah. Anyway.
It worked, though.
I love the top of show banter. This will probably be most of the episode because what we're talking about today doesn't need to take up a bunch of time, but it can. But welcome. Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
Tis true. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week is a CJ pick. CJ, what the fuck did you choose?
I picked this random short play that I visited shortly in college called Lone Star by playwright James McClure, which I only know one other play by him. And it's
I know two other plays.
Okay,
we'll get into it. Yeah,
yes,
we'll
it. Lone Star by James McClure. It's it's like a 30-page long one act.
Yeah.
All right. And
I have a breakdown later if we want it.
We always want a breakdown. You always ask, but it's yes. Yes, Lone Star, James McClure. Now, this is normally paired with another play, right?
Mm-hmm.
Called Laundry and Bourbon.
Uh-huh.
Are we going to cover that?
On my next pick.
Oh, okay, good.
Well,
so we're doing
and
the McClure miniseries.
Second
yes.
play,
within
too.
Within the miniseries.
Yes. There's a second
What's
play.
What's that called?
Private Wars, which is it's often paired with, which is also James McClure. As well.
Is it a three-act night? Like, is it another shorty short?
No. Sometimes they pair it with Laundry and Bourbon, sometimes they pair it with Private Wars. Because Private Wars is about Vietnam vets. And it's a little heavier than the other two.
Okay.
But yeah, he does that as well. I read about.
There's a lot there because it's been paired with a lot of other things as well. And I don't want to say too much. Let's start where we always start. Let's start with the breakdown.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
CJ's breakdown.
Roy, a recently returned Vietnam War vet, and his younger brother, Ray, sit behind a small-town Texas dive bar and discuss the good old times like hunting for strange, football, and picking on nerds like Cletus. You know, all the usual I peaked at 18 talk. All while swilling down Willie Nelson's favorite beer, Lone Star. That's right. This play is named after Pabst Blue Ribbon that has been renamed because Texas.
Because Texas.
Did y'all know that when my parent, like Willie Nelson, came and did the Illinois State Fair like 30 years ago, and Dad said in the the stadium they were in, Willie Nelson said they could only sell Lone Star. They couldn't sell any other beer.
That's cool. Yeah. Now it's a rider. You got to put the riders on.
I remember like as a child going to Texas, because you're in Kansas, you go down to Texas for various things. And I remember the joke always sort of, not even the joke, like the the thing they'd always say to you down there was two things. One, only order Lone Star. And I was like, I'm 12. But okay.
I'm 12.
And then
they're like, exactly.
Yeah, they're like, correct. Order it. And then, you know, and there's the whole, like, everything's bigger in Texas or whatever. But then the other thing was, if you walk into any restaurant or bar and say, the stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart.
The whole entire place will clap and say, deep in the heart of Texas. And so as a child, I would go into restaurants and do it, and rarely would it work. So I looked foolish every time, but people would swear by it. They're like, no, they'll do it. And I was like, no, they won't.
They won't. They lied to me.
I've only driven through Texas, to be honest. I've only driven through it. That's it.
Oh, I've spent a lot of time in Texas. I have family in Houston. Shout out to
Mossy.
Mossy. Hey, Moss. Love you. I love my cousin Mossy. We're a month apart, so we grew up together.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I spent some time in Houston. I've spent some time in Austin. And
Austin sounds
Austin.
Cool.
I love
yeah,
Austin.
Yeah, but
Austin, my brother
is,
lived
you know,
in Austin.
It's a bastion in a desert of dipshittery, you know?
It is. And it has its own, but also it has its own weird, like, Silicon Valley thing going on.
Yeah.
Like, Austin is both, like, hipster AF, like, the most hipster city you've ever been in ever.
Sure.
And also has like this weird Silicon Valley
like
community
very bro
of,
like a
of
bro
tech and bro
tech, yeah,
driven
yeah.
whatever.
Huh.
So it's a weird dichotomy. It's a weird place. I love it, to be clear. There's a place there called the Cathedral of Junk. And it's
really?
In this
oh, yeah.
dude's backyard
yep.
and he's been building it for like 30 years and it's a literal cathedral. It's massive and made of trash. And it rules.
It's
and you can
really
walk in
cool.
it.
And you're because you like read about it and you're like, yeah, okay, this is just going to be a crappy
right.
roadside attraction. And then you're like,
oh, it rules.
Oh my lord! Like this man has spent some time on this. Yeah,
I'm trying to bring back It Rules, and this
it
podcast
rules.
Is
it
is
rules.
It.
Yeah. You
rules.
Said it a lot. Yes,
rules.
I've been
rules.
Catching on.
It rules. It rules.
Merch. It's going to be in the merch shop merch. Soon, y'all.
It's just going to say rules.
Rules.
What does that
theater,
mean?
Theater. It rules.
It won't be branded at all. Rules.
Rules.
Like rules.
Yes.
This rules.
The rules.
Anyway, so, okay. Okay. I've never engaged with James McClure before this.
Oh, wow.
Yes. You know what? I brought this up to a couple people. Just randomly. And they were like, oh, Laundry and Bourbon. That's always like a freshman year scene study thing. And I'm like, yes, because
okay.
that's how I became familiar with it. Laundry and Bourbon, I really liked it. I think it's because I was like, oh, white trash. I can play like country girls type of thing. So I got really attached to it.
Yeah.
And then when I found out about this play, I read it. And now I think... I think this might be a thing I do for a little while because I'm so bad at coming up with... my own picks is just this whole idea of like revisiting things that I liked or pointed to a lot in college but haven't revisited since then.
Yeah.
Like Dionysus in 69. Mm-hmm. And just see what it looks like now.
What
yeah,
was it
no.
that struck you? Go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say, I think it's also a generational thing. I think that probably by the time that you got to, I think CJ was on the tail end of it. I was kind of in the middle of it. And I think it might have passed its time by the time you were getting into that study.
I think I definitely saw it as I flipped through Humanifest books, right?
Yes.
Correct,
like,
you did.
You'd
you
read
did.
And you'd see and you'd be like, okay, I'm going to remember that name. I'm going to, you know, whatever. And so this was one of them I feel like I definitely saw but never read or watched, right?
Mm-hmm.
CJ, what is it that struck you about this one in particular about James McClure, like when you were young and read it first?
Well, I read Laundry and Bourbon first.
Okay.
And really dug that and dug the characters in it. Again, when we cover this weeks from now, have not looked at the play in 20 years.
Right. Which,
but,
by the way, real quick, sorry to cut you off.
No.
Almost every playbill I found that paired these two put Laundry and Bourbon first.
Interesting. Well,
almost all of them. There was a couple that didn't, but yeah.
And this, the other thing too is I went on picking the order on memory of what I thought sounded right in order. So I could be completely
I think it should
mistaken.
Be Lone Star first. No, I mean,
yeah?
well, that's a hot take that maybe I'll get back to later with Laundry and Bourbon. But I think Lone Star has to be the first one. I think it's the first act.
Well, and I think one way or another, each play enriches the other.
Sure.
Just backstory-wise, because all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's that character that they were talking about, and now they're a fully realized character on stage type of thing. Okay. And I think for me it was just like, it. Even though this is Texas, I recognized all these characters.
Sure, we know these people, for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and well, I'll get into this take later, but I don't know that this show works alone. I think it has to have a second act.
I would agree. It's almost like the Zoo Story with the added beginning scene. Not the Zoo Story by itself. The Zoo Story by itself, or a Zoo Story by itself, is great. But the first act that they added in.
Oh, I see what you mean. At home or whatever.
At home
at the zoo or whatever.
That doesn't stand by itself.
If you just did that, it would make no sense. Yeah.
Right.
And I think this is similar, even though they're not connected technically, right? Mm-hmm. There's, I mean, you could play it that they're somehow related or something, you know, but I think, I don't know that this stands alone.
No.
But when you read the other one, you go, ooh, that's a night of theater.
Yes.
Those two together.
Well, and I was just trying to come up with fun little bite-sized stuff to do.
Well, it was bite-sized. It was only, 34 pages?
It's 34 pages like, the preface and the original cast list and stuff. So it was, 30 pages, if that. Like, I read it in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to dovetail off of what you were both saying, and I, as I'm recalling Private Wars, and I think that there are others too that are all, he created a universe that he played in where everybody's kind of vaguely connected.
Sure.
And what I also dug about just reading about James McClure and kind of remembering seeing the shows and I can't remember what order I saw them in, but I certainly remember seeing them, was that he was kind of a regional dude. Like, he was a regional theater guy. He taught and wrote, and he was at different places around the country, often in the South. You know, Alabama Shakespeare, I think, was mentioned.
Correct.
And all that. And so I kind of dig that, like, he spent his time in New York early on, but then clearly, moved and started doing regional stuff. So he was never a Broadway guy. He feels like he was just a working class playwright.
Sure.
That was, writing from clearly his own experiences and, and all those, references and flavors and smells. And I totally agree with you, Bailey, that Lone Star feels like it's the establishing piece to me.
Yeah.
Like, this is really setting the world. We're understanding who these guys are. It's funny. It's not. It has layers you can play with, especially really experienced actors. And then just real quick, because it just popped into my head. So Powers Booth originated this role. And then just a few years later, he would play Jim Jones in the made-for-TV movie about Jonestown. He played Roy for the first time. And
that's
kind
of fun.
Yeah, Powers Booth is, he's an underrated actor. But he was also
Powers Booth rules.
Yeah, he's also sort of a Ross. It rules. He rules. Ross. But anyway, I'm babbling and digressing. But
you're babbling Brooke Scott, and we love it.
Yeah. Thomas Brooke.
His last play, we should find. It's called Iago.
Ooh.
And it was developed at Alabama Shakes.
No shit.
I bet that'd be good. And we like those kind of things. Desdemona those kind of
the scenes you've never watched on stage before that they talk about all the time in Shakespeare.
Exactly.
I still want a Sycorax, y'all. Give me a Sycorax.
Sycorax.
Oh, yeah. You know, we always put Sycorax in our Tempests. So at Shakespeare Youth
Sycorax
Festival.
Sycorax is just
Sycorax,
such a
we make a
name.
Character because it's someone that is such a presence in the play but is not has no lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we
I want
give,
that prequel.
We give her some Prospero lines and shift the meaning, sort of. And she, the last time we did it, we built this tree, and the middle of the tree was brown, hose material, like mesh, but really tight. Mm-hmm. You know, so that
nylon.
People could put their faces through it and their hands through, so it would morph the tree, and that was our Sycorax, and it was really cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was great. Anyway, Sycorax. So
Sycorax.
I watched this play also. I read it and
You've
I read
watched it.
I did. I found it on YouTube. It was City Park Players, which I don't know where that is.
Mm-mm.
But it was an interesting. It was three pretty good actors, and you know, semi well directed, and it was that was harsh. It was great. They did a great job. And it was an hour long.
Whoa! How?
Right? Yeah, that's sort of what I thought. But as I was watching, I was sort of like, I guess.
They must have been taking a lot of time and space.
They were, but it kind of needed it. Like, it sort of worked for me. Like, because when I read it, I just went,
yes, me too.
And I think part of it was the audience was living, so they were laughing a lot. So that probably extended some of it. But it was, they took their time in a good way. There were moments of me being like, snap, let's go.
Sure.
But for the most part, I actually thought it was interesting. It made me want to play Cletus really badly because the guy playing Cletus looked exactly like me. And I was like, I could do this so much. That's so mean. I'm a terrible shit talker. But
I have played all three of these parts.
No shit.
Oh, really?
Okay. Acting classes and black box shows. Yeah, I did them all. I think Ray was my best. I think I was best at Ray.
Ray is the younger brother.
Yeah. Should we put this up? But CJ is Ray, Scott is Roy, and I'm Cletus.
Okay, yes, sure, and then we can do laundry and bourbon, and then we can do art.
I'm not doing art.
I'm never doing art. You're going to do it.
No,
I
love it so much. And I love the three of us doing it.
Fine. Finn. Okay. I like this play. I think it's interesting. But both times when I watched it and when I read it, I said, this can't just be the only thing you do in a night. Right?
Right.
No. But it's good.
The arc is slight.
It's kind of one big punch,
like
joke setup punchline, but it's good.
It's got the feel of those sort of old school Southern short stories, or even like Lake Wobegon, you know, NPR kind of vibe. That there's, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like just that is slower and a specific, and it's a very specific place. But if you're gonna do this, you might as well put another piece with it. Mm-hmm. And do a full evening of it. And Laundry and Bourbon works. And when we talk about that, it's been a while since I've read
it. It's a good
that
companion.
Well, I guess the first thing I thought about, and it's not because the plays are alike in any way other than the content-ish, these Vietnam time capsule plays where it's like, for me, growing up, Vietnam War vets have always been old men. Mm-hmm. And seeing these plays where you're seeing them just come back. And I thought of August Wilson's Jitney, because there's a couple War vets in there that are young men. And it made me think of Peace of My Heart, which I can't think of the playwright. And that's mostly women, female characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
But just this whole idea of like, and those plays are happening now where it's like you've got a young war vet and it's a dude from Iraq or Afghanistan, you know? And that just made me think of those plays too while I was reading this. Because the first time I read this, when I was just starting to resent where I came from, I was like, oh, dumb fucking rednecks. And then I read it this time and I'm like, oh, this is a guy that's just seen some fucking shit and just got home and he's trying to pretend like he's tough.
It's all about assimilation and reassimilation. Yeah. And yeah, I think that, you know, and just being a little bit older than y'all, I remember that sort of sweeping era of Vietnam movies. And I don't mean like just Platoon or Apocalypse Now, but like Coming Home is a movie, although it's got crazy John Voight in it. He was quite good in the movie, and Jane Fonda. But it's just about veterans literally just coming back and just can't find themselves. And it became such a pop culture zeitgeisty thing because everybody could use it. If you had a conservative slant, you could take and do a Vietnam story. If you had a super liberal one, you could. Like if you were just talking about the mess and the chaos of it, you know, you think about Rambo, you know, people, you know, think about Rambo and you know, Sylvester Stallone killing people. But that First Blood, the first movie, is really quite powerful because it's just about a dude who is stuck in the past. He was trained to be a machine and a killing machine and a special forces guy and has no identity anymore or self anymore. And it's actually like one of Stallone's really good performances, like beyond being an action flick, it's great, you know.
But well, yeah, and anyway. It's been it was an interesting perspective again for me because I used to work at Richmark Entertainment, which is based on the VA campus that's here in LA. If you're going down the 405, it's right at the exit of Wilshire on the 405.
Oh, yeah,
huge
yeah.
VA campus. And even in the I worked there 17 years ago, and my experience is always my view of vets, other than being older people, is just how fucking fucked over they've been to. And to, mm-hmm. again, get this perspective where they're young men just coming back and trying to get back into society. Right. It's just it's a different viewpoint. And I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's easy to look at this play and just go, okay, it's about like, excuse the phrase, but I'm from these people, so I can say that, but like, it's about three dumb hicks who are delusional and just think about being 18 and that's when they peaked, which is true, CJ, what you said. And I'm not calling you out on that, because that is very much what it is. These people peaked at 18. But I think there is another layer here that is sort of about, and I don't fully love or buy the final monologue that Roy gives. I don't think it's earned necessarily in this play.
It's a quick flip, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. And it keep and the tension of it keeps getting eaten up by jokes too. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of like, okay.
And I
wanted a little more, like, I wanted it to hit at some point. And not that every play needs to, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And some plays take it too far. We saw a play, I won't talk about too much, but we saw a play at Fringe this year that was like kind of a perfect piece, except when it hit hard, it went way too hard. And I was like, yeah, you went too far. You didn't earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this one felt like it didn't, it wanted something. It wanted to earn this like great moment, and the great moment doesn't stick mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. And that might be the time that it was written. It might've hit me differently 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Today, it didn't sell for me. I don't know.
It's a little bit of a punch pull, I think. And I think that that's just an example of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just sort of a change in drama as a whole, maybe.
Sure.
And I think he was, because I don't think of it as a comedy piece, but it is. It's very funny.
No, it is.
Every
line got a laugh in the filmed version.
Yeah. But yeah, you're kind of waiting for a little bit of the dark underbelly to come out, and we don't quite get it.
Right. The darkness, quote unquote, that sort of is happening is you have this very drunk vet who we find out he's a vet, Roy, and he even shoots himself in the head at the beginning with, his finger gun. Mm-hmm. And I when I first was reading this, was like, oh, shit, that's where this is headed.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, he does that, and then you meet Ray, and you see this brotherly relationship. Roy and Ray, our father's an idiot, he named us Roy and Ray, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's very fun. Then you meet Cletus, who's this sort of simple guy, and he owns a hardware store and blah 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 blah. They call him Skeeter. He wrecked Roy's pink
1959
T-Bird, mm-hmm. Thunderbird, right? And which, interesting,
yeah.
Interesting pick for a car, but like, great.
Yeah,
great. I'm all for it, but weird. And he even says at one point, he's like, yeah, I pulled so much strange with that car.
With
the pink T-Bird?
Pink Thunderbird?
Word.
All right.
Word, but like, dang. But it's, so he, I like the relationships that are built. The whole joke from the beginning is like, who would ever move to Oklahoma? Oklahoma's so stupid. We're going to go watch the Longhorns beat up the Sooners or whatever. And then the final line of the whole play is, well, at least we don't live in Oklahoma, right? And so yeah, I was sort of like, is this just a setup punchline? Which is why I think you have to have a second act. Because if that's the end of your night, I think you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's our night. That's what we're ending on. But it was also cute. It was fun. I don't, obviously, our 2023, is that the year? Our 2023 brains, I harshed at a few things, right?
Yeah.
I shuddered a few times.
Yeah.
Do we have to use the G slur every time we're talking about, you know? And like,
yes.
But you're like, yeah, that's how these people also speak.
Yeah.
Probably still.
Probably still. But it was also used for comedy in some ways. And
yes.
Those things are tough. I think if you produced it now, it's not hard to lift those things out and it's still the same
show. I agree. That was the one thing I thought. I was like, oh, this is very amendable.
Correct. So I feel like I can forgive that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think
not forgive, but you get it.
Yeah,
make it work.
I can
otherwise.
Look past it. Yeah,
yes.
like I think he, I think James McClure knows all these people too, and his voice and him catching other people's voices, I think is the cool thing. I think that's his coolest gift, and the specificity of the language and the language word issues aside. Like you feel a vibe, you feel a rhythm. Like, I think that's something we don't talk about a lot with some playwrights, but he's just got this rhythm to the dialogue that just drove it for me in this reread. It was amazing how much I remembered. I was like, okay, this beat happens in this beat. I was like, I sat down and I was like, oh, let me see how much I recall. I was like, okay. Then he comes in. Then the car. When does the car happen? And like, yeah.
Well, and then you find out Ray has been sleeping with Roy's wife while he was gone.
Yeah. While he was in Vietnam.
And you're sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
And he, he calls it Nam. Ray calls it Nam, and Roy's like, you can't call it Nam. You have to call it Vietnam. Okay. Ray's been sleeping with Roy's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And
Elizabeth.
He tells him about it, and you expect Roy, and maybe this is on purpose, sort of like a going against your expectations sort of thing, but you expect him to freak out.
Yeah,
and he kind of doesn't. He punches him, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds out about the car. You're expecting the car the whole time. You're sitting there like, oh no, he's got to tell him about the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drops the thing about the wife, and you forget about the car for a bit. You're like, oh no. At one point, he goes, all right, there's one other thing I got to tell you, and you just go, oh no. So in that way, in that lightness, I actually enjoyed it. It's an enjoyable piece of theater.
It could have gone Sam Shepard there at the end.
It really could have. And in particular, it could have gotten very violent concern.
And I think that's not what this piece is trying to say. It's not trying to go in that way. But maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just Bailey. Maybe I'm jaded. But I kept wanting there to be a little more dirt and grime.
Wanted
and
some Albie or some
something.
I think that's my real only criticism, is that I thought it was a little fluffy.
Even Susan Laurie Parks, though, right? Like, there's these Top Dog Underdog, where it's, there's this undercurrent of, like, of tension releases the valve so much that the tension doesn't really ever exist.
Right.
And it feels a bit like Three Guys, One Groupon in that way, the play that we produced at Fringe last year, where
except
it is
the world
just
ended at the end.
Well, that's true, but it did in this one too. When he told his Oklahoma joke. I'm just kidding. that was a bad joke, but you get it. I think people should read this play. I think it's worth reading. I think
it will take you literally 20 minutes. It
takes no time. But then maybe read another one of his plays after to, like, satiate what you're...
Well, and now what Scott was saying, again, I've only done this in Laundry and Bourbon, but I've never had any curiosity about any of his other shit, so... Yeah.
Private Wars is pretty cool. It's a little heavier.
I'm gonna check
that out.
It's
a little darker. Yeah.
He's got a lot of stuff.
I remember I had to do a monologue from Private Wars, back in.
I want to say now, that was it. Another place right that now. We went for a monologue thing, for, no. especially for the dudes.
It's okay.
Are y'all familiar with the playwright John? And I don't even know if I'm saying his last name right. Guare, G-U-A-R-E.
Yeah,
sure.
Of course. Yeah.
His big thing is. I can't.
You have a whole thing of his plays in your bookshelf.
Well, the one I'm familiar with House is Lighty Breeze. House of Blue Leaves. That's what everyone knows.
Six and
the one I'm familiar with is Lighty Breeze, which is on fucking Nantucket in the 1880s. So it's like a really specific time.
I haven't heard of
in a really weird place. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff. We could cover him. That'd be a fun do someday.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Scott. Yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, going back to it, like I think that one of the reasons that we met him in college or was introduced to him in college is because these are great acting scenes. Like mm-hmm. I remember having to do just a scene with because we needed a three actor scene. So
ours was Laundry and Bourbon. Was my scene.
But it's because it's so. The objectives are clear, like when you do the breakdown, what does this character want? What does this character want? What do they do? Yeah, how are they going to get it? There's so much room for play. There's really room for a lot of interpretation. You can go a lot of directions in your choices for each of these little moments. You could play this real fucking dark.
You could play it like it's headed towards something really dark and then keep releasing about that would
or
work.
You could be a sophomore in college and have no idea about how to make a choice for yourself.
Well, I remember getting into a fight when I played Ray with the director, who was a student director, who was just like, laughs, just play the laughs, and I'm like, that's what makes me horny. Yeah, but that's not how I'm seeing this guy play at all. Like, if I play the opposite, I think it'll be funnier. Nope, play it. And so we fought and fought, and finally I won. So
we should say that James McClure did die at his home in Marina Del Rey, California, in 2011.
Yeah. Oh.
Of cancer.
Aww.
But yeah, so which is sad. But he won't listen to this episode, unfortunately. Mm. But you can, and thank you for doing it, friends.
after I do this and Laundry and Bourbon, we're going. My next, I'm Bailey. You're the one that inspired me to do this miniseries thing. We're gonna do each of the 10 plays from the John Patrick Shanley 10 book.
Jesus Christ!
Oh wow!
Wow, that's
some
heavy.
Of them are like 10 pages long.
No, we should do 13 by Shanley.
Oh my God.
There's one called 13 by Shanley.
And there
is? 13 of his plays. Yeah. It was festival they did in New York. Yeah. The guy who played Danny in the 13 by Shanley festival directed me and Danny when I.
Right. Danny in the Deep Blue Sea is part of 10.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
so
it's part
Women
of
Manhattan
too.
And the Red Coat.
Yeah,
and,
the Red Coat. I remember. Yeah.
Just I did that my freshman year of acting.
Anyway, should we get out of here?
Yeah.
You guys like this play? It was a good play.
Yeah. I like this play. Thanks for bringing it back. It was an interesting nostalgia thing, and such as a very specific time period. I dug re-examining it.
Yeah.
It's gonna be my thing. It's helping me come up with material to cover, to be honest.
All right. Weird.
Do you guys have any spitlets?
I do.
LA Spotlight.
I'm seeing this on the 30th of July. You Can't Disappear in Studio City, written directed by Chris Haas with Animoya Films. I just got my ticket yesterday.
All right, I might try and join
me.
Yeah.
It's Saturdays and Sundays at 8 at Three Line Studio, which is way the fuck up there in the valley, but I'm going. And it closes on the 6th of August.
I don't have a lot. Check out the Broadwater social media, the Broadwater LA. There is a crap ton of stuff happening in that building post-Fringe. There's some Fringe extensions happening, but there's a whole bunch of improv, sketch comedy. There's a musical happening coming up soon. There are plays happening in Second Stage and the main stage. And so just check it out. It's starting to vibe, and it's cool to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for part one of two of the James McClure miniseries, which we'll return to next time CJ has a pick. That's all.
Yeah.
Oh, what's next time? Join us next time for McDonough.
We got to decide our order. We haven't decided.
In order of writing.
What we're covering.
What are we covering? What are you choosing?
I don't know any of them. So
I choose Pillow Man.
Pillow Man was the only one.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Pillow Man will be one of them, friends.
That's right.
Get ready for Pillow Man.
All right, go ahead, Siege.
Do y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Fact, our theme song is better than your theme song.
Batch.
True.
He also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
Yes.
Or an champagne.
Or champagne.
Champagne and a shot of tequila.
I bet you like Indian Pale Ale. IPAs? Double I's?
Oh, I hate IPAs. They suck.
Well,
wow.
She might love them, so you might be offending her.
Then I'll judge
Don't
her.
Yuck her yum.
Wow.
I will yuck that yum.
You're cheating hard.
You're cheating hard.
We'll make you weep. You'll cry and cry and try to sleep. But sleep won't come. The whole night through.
I like the horse foley.
Your cheating heart will tell you.
We'll tell on you, motherfucker. It's a heavy, just raging guitar comes in at the end.
Meow.
Yeah. Later, everybody.
The theater. The theater.
Theater.